Well, welcome everyone at another edition of the Horsing Around podcast here. I'm Andy Lindahl. I apparently lead a boring life because I'm always in Denver. My friend Andrew Mason, who of course is the man, the myth, the legend here on DenverBroncos.com. We used to say back in the day when I got into radio, Andrew, that you're on assignment right now. Is that fair?
Actually, I'm out, but this is the one week I am not on assignment because this is a vacation week. Although I'm still writing, and you can go to Denver if you're on DenverBroncos.com right now. If you found our podcast here, you know you can go through and see some of my stuff on free agents. We've got the top 100 as of Monday, version 1.0. It's obviously changed since then. We're gonna have an update coming up in a few days. But also going through the free agents by position, the top guys at each spot. You can find that among the photo galleries on DenverBroncos.com. It's one of those Bleacher Report style kind of click through galleries with some analysis. So I'm on vacation. It was the family trip to Disney World, my 4-year-old's first trip to Disney World this week, but not quite disconnected from all things NFL.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we jump right into your top five of free agents? Because, again, it's going to be a popular topic, and let's be honest about it, we're all just kind of in a holding pattern until we get to the combine and we get some releases, although there was some action today as far as guys getting released, some action, I guess, earlier in the week, too, as far as the Giants go, releasing Victor Cruz, releasing Rashad Jennings. Today, Brandon Alberts gets released, so he gets thrown into the mix. Mario Williams released, a guy that may, hit some radars, get on some talk show fodder because of the name. I don't think that's a guy, if you're a Denver Bronco fan, I wouldn't look for him to come here. I don't think he and Vance Joseph loved the fit for each other in Miami even before Joseph left. So we're going to take him off the list. But start with what you knew this week and now how it may change as far as the cuts this past couple days.
Well, certainly, Brandon Albert kind of was a big name this week. But, some other interesting names that were out there, you go back to the start of this week, and the Giants, let go of Victor Cruz and Rashad Jennings. Jennings, I think he's going to plug in somewhere as part of running back rotation. He might sit on the market a while just because he's an older running back. But, Victor Cruz is interesting. His numbers have declined over the last few years, and certainly he's lost prominence in that offense with the emergence of Odell Beckham Jr. in particular, but could project as a slot guy, and it's going to be fascinating to see what the Broncos do going forward. I think they're going to have more 3-wide sets this year, but is that going to involve Emmanuel Sanders going inside and being a slot at times, or is it going to involve bringing a slot guy and keeping Emmanuel Sanders on the outside? So I mean, I think that the Broncos may be in play for some wide receivers as a result, but we're going to see some more cuts over the next few weeks. I think we're only getting started here. Also, teams are now hitting that window where they can denote franchise and transition tags. And, for a league-wide perspective, it'll be fascinating to see what is done with some guys like Martellus Bennett in New England, Kirk Cousins in Washington, Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh. The running back franchise tag is a pretty reasonable one, and I could see the Steelers, going ahead and biting the bullet and giving Bell the franchise tag and keeping him around another year. But, the Redskins, they franchised Cousins last year. What did they do this year? Do they give him the transition tag instead? As I think the Steelers will do with Bell, do you bite the bullet, give him the huge number as the franchise tag guy? And that will certainly affect their cap space, obviously. So a lot of moving parts, and I think we're only starting to see how the market's going to shake out over the next few weeks heading into the start of the league year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Going back to that wide receiver conversation that you kind of started there, as we were looking, and of course, for those that don't know, I do a talk show with Ed McCaffrey. Catch us on Denver Sports 760 from 10 to 1 every day. And we were discussing some of the potential free agents out there. One of the names that I bounced off him, I'll bounce it off you. Now, he doesn't serve as a slot guy. He's going to have to want to take a pay cut, but he is from these parts. And that is Vincent Jackson, not the same guy that he was when he got the huge contract out of Tampa Bay. But if he gets away from Tampa Bay, is that a guy you could bring in here as your third guy, not to come in and play slot, but then maybe the opposite position of Demaryius Thomas that would give you two physical specimens on the outside, and that's where you could move, say, an Emmanuel Sanders inside if that's the route you were to go? Do you think there'd be any mild interest even in Vincent Jackson here?
I think you'll kick the tires on a guy like Vincent Jackson. Again, it depends how the market plays out. I think, given the given how wide receivers are plentiful at this point, there's a scarcity at other positions, not just in terms of free agency, but just in general, a scarcity of quality in some positions. And we're going to get into that in this conversation, I'm sure. But wide receiver is one of those positions that has a glut of talented players. So, you know, I think they'll kick the they may kick the tires on Jackson. Certainly, it'll be a field goal good story to bring him back home. Colorado Springs guy, University of Northern Colorado product, probably the you know, if not the best player ever to come out of UNC, one of the top two or three all time. But you know, at this point, I mean, he's still a physical specimen, but you know, he wasn't the best at getting separation to begin with. He was always a guy who made catches in traffic. Now doesn't really get much separation at all. His numbers and numbers were down the last couple of years. Injuries have caught up with him. I don't know that there's much left. And I think you look at him now, but if you see more wide receivers that get released, it may well be that other guys are better options.
Well, there you go. And obviously we know there's an injury history there. And, you know, I don't know. I guess, look, we're at that point of the year where we're just throwing names out there. And to your point, with Brandon Alberts being released, when I first saw the name, I thought, hey, let's get him in there. Jeff Legwald joined our show today, our buddy from ESPN. He reminded us that Alberts has an injury history. Obviously, look, we'll find out. If anybody knows about the Miami players, it's going to be Vance Joseph. So he may already have an opinion. He may already be telling his guys yay or nay, don't even think about this guy. You know, that's where I think you go back to what we've already talked about, a TJ Lang and Andrew Whitworth. TJ Lang is someone that Jeff likes for maybe the guard position. You know, Whitworth, though he's 35, I guess maybe that's a guy you consider, Andrew. But when you talk about sparsity at a position, the offensive line, unfortunately, both in the draft and free agency, it's not a good time to be trying to upgrade in your offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little more, there's more depth and more long-term solutions potentially at guard than at tackle, because you mentioned TJ Lang. Kevin Zeitler of Cincinnati is another guy who I think is going to get a lot of interest. But Larry Warford from Detroit, he's a bigger guy, not quite as athletic, more of a, you know, road grader, mauler type, who I think is going to get some play. But yeah, especially in the draft, I mean, there's some potential solutions in free agency. And Whitworth, it's interesting. You mentioned Miami and the Vance Joseph connection. You know, Vance Joseph was in Cincinnati for a couple of years before that, even though he was only coaching the defensive backs, not, a coordinator. Certainly, he knows that roster very well. So I think some of the same things that come into play with the Dolphins, whether, you know, come into play with Bengals that are hitting the market as well in terms of, you know, what he thinks of them and whether they'll fit. And when you, and so with Kevin Zeitler, who's going to get a big contract, I think that may be out of the Broncos' range just because they have multiple needs. But Whitworth, he's playing the best football of his career. Yes, he's, you know, he's 35 years old, but for a team that's in win now mode, he may well be the right fit if they move on, you know, from Russell Okung and have a need at left tackle. You know, for a team that, again, team that's got that window that feels like it's in that championship window right now, Whitworth may be a viable option.
Well, and let's be honest about it. You and I both know the profile, at least it's been laid out to me, for John Elway free agent signings. And for the most part, outside of DeMarcus Ware and Peyton Manning, who were gold coders before they ever even hit the market, usually John goes for guys in their second contract at the age of 28 or under. You know, Luis Vasquez fits that profile, TJ Ward, Aqib Talib. Those are the kind of guys he's hoping to sign if he's going to throw big money at somebody. But with what we've talked about, with the scarcity of available options to upgrade the O-line, he may have to break trend from what he likes to do this year, right?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting you mentioned guys like Peyton Manning and DeMarcus Ware. Not only were they, you know, Hall of Fame caliber guys, but they're also outstanding locker room guys. And, you know, Whitworth, and another guy who I think I think a lot of fans are interested in him because he's a local product, is a Calais Campbell, of course, went to high school in Denver, DPS guy, great career with the Arizona Cardinals. Now, he's going to his third contract, but given the level of play that he's at, it's still high, and he's, you know, only in his early 30s. When I'm talking about a mid-30s guy like Whitworth, you know, on the defensive line, Campbell's probably as good as good a free agent as there is on the market right now. Kaywon Short from Carolina is going to get more money because he's only going into a second contract, but Campbell's probably still a better player at this point. So, you know, given the need on the defensive line as well, which is as pressing as the offensive line, I think the Broncos may take a look at him, and maybe that's the kind of guy that you, if you look at Calais Campbell, maybe you can get him on the hometown discount to get him back to get him back to what is literally his hometown.
Honestly, that's where I was going next, Andrew, because to me, Calais Campbell, and I know, look, I don't know, it'll be a top priority, and the Broncos will know where he's at in his recovery better than anybody else, but Vance Walker, if a Calais Campbell and Vance Walker were signed up pretty soon, I'd feel good about the work you've done along the defensive line, and I think then you squarely turn your attention to the offensive line. You know, I mean,
still need nose tackle, though, in that case, because you got Sly Williams who's hitting free agency, too, and you know, Campbell and Vance Walker, they're both more, you know, 3-5 technique guys. So you'd still be looking at a two-down guy. But a two-down nose tackle you might be able to find on the market. They're also pretty high on Kyle Peck, who'll be part of that rotation, too.
Well, and hopefully you could find a value. Look, we know this. Vance Joseph may not want to, but if you don't find the perfect nose guard, and who knows? I think Sly's moving on. I'm still curious to see what kind of offers Sly gets. Maybe it's one of those things where it's a Ronnie Hillman situation where the interest isn't there the way he thought it was, and maybe ultimately these two parties come back together. I would doubt that, but you never know. I didn't think Ronnie Hillman would be back last year, to be honest with you. Now, he didn't stick, but it was what it was. Vance Joseph, he can go to a 4-3 if he has to. And maybe that's – who knows? We'll have to wait and see how this plays out. I certainly would be in big favor of them signing a Calais Campbell, as we talked about. I think Vance Walker was having a great camp. There's a guy that you'd have to imagine would be affordable. And there's some other intriguing defensive line prospects out there. But weren't you saying that the defensive line class is fairly deep in this draft, Andrew?
Yeah, it's pretty deep. I mean, I think you're going to be able to find potential nose tackle options, at least rotational guys, you get in the day two. Now, you don't want to go in with a need for a starter. I think that's kind of the key thing. And, you know, you mentioned Ronnie Hillman. One reason why they signed Ronnie Hillman was to make sure that you had that quality number two back to rotate in with C.J. Anderson. You like to go into the draft with a working lineup that at as many positions as possible where you feel like, okay, we're in good shape here. You know, we've got a starting 22-plus key backups, third receiver, second running back, et cetera, to where you don't have to make a reach based on need. So I think that, you know, that it's interesting that you mentioned Sylvester Williams because, yes, I mean, if he ends up lingering on the market, I could see them bringing him back. But, you know, I think they want to make sure they at least have a starting lineup that they feel like that they can do something with coming out of free agency and then not have the pressure to have to take a defensive lineman coming up. And they also want to see – they want to see Adam Gotsis get better. He was given the instructions – go in the weight room, get bigger and stronger. Don't take much time off. Keep, you know, because you got to get stronger. You got to be able to handle the point of attack. We'll see if he's done that. Like as Bill Kolar told me last week, you know, it's one thing to tell a guy to work out. It's one thing for that guy to say when he's leaving the building at the end of the season, yeah, I'm going to take a week off and then go to work and go in the weight room. But it's another thing to actually do it. They're going to be very curious to see how Adam Gotsis looks when they get back from this break and start having organized workouts in April.
Well, we might as well touch on the quarterback drama. Not that, you know what, and I think, I'll be honest with you, Andrew, the more that I start to read the national stuff, I think the national people are kind of getting the message that we've been sort of trying to get out locally here. Now, you never say never with John Elway, and I will never discount or throw out the window any real situation that possibly makes you better a position that maybe there's a little bit of need at. You know, I think, though, us in Denver know that they want to get a good look at the young quarterbacks they have. You don't invest a first-round draft pick in a guy unless you want to see him get developed. All the moves they make would suggest they're going to not only try to develop Paxton Lynch, but Trevor Siemian as well. And now the national narrative on Tony Romo, which extended to Ed Werder today, and the latest report coming from Ed Werder, said that Tony Romo is expecting to be released. No shock there. That was reported over the weekend. But apparently the wish list 1 and 2 is going to be Houston and Kansas City first, and that offensive line does come into play for Tony. I also think Tony knows he'd have to play on a what would be a very team-friendly deal if he were to come to the Broncos here. And Werder also pointing out, before we get into the specifics of any worry of maybe losing Romo to anyone, Werder pointed out today on ESPN as I was watching that the last two times Tony Romo's taken a big hit in a game, it's been the end of his season. So for those of people that want to act like we're making too much of the injury thing, I'm sorry. I'm not backing off it. I don't want to compare to Peyton Manning's neck. He wasn't taking direct shoulder shots to his neck. There was a danger there, but I just don't think in the same strike zone area that Tony Romo's injuries have been in. So I think it's a legitimate concern. Now, if you go to Houston, they'd have to do something with Brock Osweiler, so that could get interesting. And as far as Kansas City, I reached out to a buddy that covers the Chiefs that's an insider there, Jay Binkley, who works at 610 Sports in Kansas City. He told me the Chiefs wouldn't have any interest. What do you start to make of the possible destinations now for Tony Romo?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you wonder where this is coming from. Is it coming from someone in the Romo camp? I mean, my guess is that it certainly would be at this point. Now, with Romo with the Broncos and that possibility, I mean, if you could get him done and fix the offensive line, then it would be something. Even with the young quarterbacks, who they clearly want to see get better, they want to see where they can go, but. If you could, at the right price, I think you'd certainly think about it. We know John Elway has pulled some rabbits from the hat over the years. So like you say, don't dismiss the possibility of anything, because, you know, you go back to 2014, you know, who could have seen Aqib Talib and DeMarcus Ware coming? I mean, that, and you know, that was, you know, that was a surgical strike to open free agency. And then you tacked a TJ Ward onto that, and Emmanuel Sanders, on a lesser deal a few days later, and you had four guys that became core components of pushing the team over the top for the Super Bowl following the 2015 season. So, you know, you don't dismiss anything. But if Tony Romo can't be had on a relatively team-friendly deal, which has incentives, which covers you in case of injury, because, you know, with Peyton Manning, you know, he had – 1 year that got scuttled with the neck problems. Tony Romo has had 2 years completely torn asunder by back issues, and like you mentioned, the Edward, that he's, you know, the last two big hits he's taken have knocked him out. So I think there are some deeper concerns there, and you can't bring in a Tony Romo without fortifying the offensive line. I mean, the last hit that he had, you know, was in the preseason of 2016, and he had that great Cowboy offensive line in front of him, and it didn't prevent him from taking the one hit that put him out of the lineup and Dak Prescott into the lineup. So I don't think Romo is a viable solution without fixing the offensive line. And if you're spending too much money on Tony Romo, then you don't have a lot of cap room to fix the offensive line. The Broncos are sitting on a little over $38 million of room, but that's going to go pretty fast.
Let's be honest about it, Andrew, and if you're the Broncos, I feel like, in a way, if you want Romo, you almost have to trade for him. I do think there's a lot of attractive parts about this Denver job. I'm not taking a swipe at it. I mean, this roster's good, and the defense is close to being great again, as John always said. That's why I'd like the Calais Campbell signing. But all that in there, I don't know that you want to get in a bidding war for Tony Romo, and they're not going to trade for him. And so we'll see if he really wants to come here. And I've heard whispers that he does, quite honestly, coming from people that are more on his side, I would say. But he has to understand. I mean, Peyton Manning took a $5 million pay cut 2 years after setting the touchdown and passing records and everything else. So I just think Tony has to accept that if you want to play for half of what you're playing now, I think the Broncos are interested. If you want to make $20 million, this is probably not the spot.
And he may say, "Hell, well, I can get $20 million from, say, Kansas City, and they're right there." And I mean, they did. You know, Kansas City did, you know, win the division last year. I mean, certainly they're, you know, they're a quality team. But is Kansas City any closer to a Super Bowl than Denver is? I would say probably not, in spite of the records. I think in the cases in Oakland, which doesn't need a quarterback, but in the case of Oakland and Kansas City, you're looking at teams that you know, had some good fortune to get to the records that they had, and I think are regression candidates. And you know, Houston is a fascinating possibility, because they did go 9-7 with a shaky season from Brock Osweiler. Pretty good offensive line, a great defense like Denver has. Certainly, it's been outstanding 2 years in a row. Maybe one thing that does favor Houston is the fact that they're in a relatively weak division. The winner was Houston at 9-7 but it is an improving division because Tennessee got up there and made a push at the end, and you think they're going to get better. And I think Indianapolis, now they've got the cloud of Ryan Grigson away from them, I think they're going to get better. It's, you know, at some point Andrew Luck's performance is going to translate into some bigger results than they've had. So I don't know that, like, Houston on the surface, it may look like a better situation, factoring in the quality of the division and other things, but I'm not sure it's as good a situation as it looks on paper right now.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but what is interesting is Ed Werder cited that Tony wouldn't have to go very far. It was one of the attractive things for him. By the way, he did say Tony wants to stay in Dallas and be assured he's going to get a chance to compete for the job, but we all know that's not going to happen.
No.
You know, I would say to Tony, if that's really what you want, then cut your contract down, go compete, see how it feels after OTAs, and with a friendlier contract, to be quite honest with you, then you probably get traded easier anyway, right?
You can trade him anywhere almost. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the contract is the one thing that's holding something up right now. If he had a deal that was reworked to be incentive based, if he reworked that deal with Dallas, I mean, he could make himself viable there, or he could be traded even before the start of the league year. But that contract is an albatross, and even teams with a lot of cap room don't want to assume something with that much risk attached to it. So we'll see.
Well, and for those wondering why, he's the highest cap hit in the league for 2017 right now. Hey, speaking of cap hits and having to redo a contract, the Russell Okun situation. Cameron Wolf of the Denver Post this week reporting Russell's not interested in taking a pay cut. You know what? I liked Russell Okun for the most part. I would be intrigued to see what he can do on a more team-friendly deal, as we're using the term this week. I think Russell needs to accept. I just don't think anybody's going to pay him under that current contract. And this may be, to me, this is where maybe you wish you had an agent that could tell you what your true market value is. Russell has no agent with his ear to the ground for him right now. And I admire the man for trying to get things done on his own and frankly taking a deal where he bet on himself. But Andrew, I think Russell has to face that he's going to have to redo his deal, because I don't care what team it is, I don't see anybody giving him the contract that the Broncos are scheduled to give him and likely won't pick up the option on.
Well, it was interesting. You go back to last year and you know, he hits free agency and he's on the market for a week before he gets the deal done with the Broncos. So he was not in that top tier of guys. He was in that next tier of players getting contracts that are, you know, maybe a bit below what they had intended. So, I mean, I think you've got to kind of look at what you are. Now, that being said, I thought Okun really played a lot better toward the end of the season, and actually got through the season without missing any games, which was the first time in his career that he played in all 16 games in a season. So certainly there are some positive indicators there, but I think the big issue is the fact that you have 2 years guaranteed if he's on the roster next month, and that's a big thing, and that's why if the reports are true that he doesn't want to restructure. You know, given some other needs, and also given the money that would get freed up if the Broncos didn't have him. I mean, you take, you know, we mentioned the cap room that they had, and if Russell Okun was not on the roster, the cap room goes from over $38 million to north of $50 million, which puts the Broncos in play for some different guys and some more improvements as well. So, you know, we'll see. It's going to be fascinating to see this in the next couple of weeks, but you know, that again, it may come down to what they think of players on the market. If they, you know, if they see the tackles on the market, or they see, you know, like an Andrew Whitworth, and they think they can get him and at the right price, and you know, it may be a case where then they decide to, okay, we're going to roll the dice and see what we get on the market and see if we can get a better deal, better quality for the money than what we have. It's going to be a calculated risk one way or the other.
Well, we know this as we wrap it up, Andrew. I'm sure we'll see a few more cuts, a few more moves in front of the opening of free agency next week. We've got the combine coming up and all that. So we'll talk more about what you're going to be looking at the combine for at the combine at the end of the month here. And heck, we may even be talking about who isn't going to do what and all that coming up at the combine.
Well, you heard Chad Kelly apparently didn't get invited.
Yeah.
Back out of Ole Miss. That was the big buzz today because of some issues in his past, and of course Joe Mixon from Oklahoma. A lot of, we all know about his issues, the the incident that was caught on camera a few years ago that even got Brent Musburger into some hot water when he was trying to defend him in the Sugar Bowl, and Mixon won't be at the Combine as well. So that's two guys that were nixed from the Combine list because of character issues. So that's it's certainly an interesting stage for the NFL, an interesting step for the league and the Combine to take going forward.
Well, you know what, and I'm sure you would echo this. I bet the young football players then need to pay attention to that, because it tells you the NFL is not even going to let you get into the league if they're worried about the wrong headlines coming. So you better take note.
Yeah, and it also tells you, I mean, they may still get shots because, of course, the list of guys that have gotten opportunities and made it in the league without going to the Combine is pretty substantial. You can look at Chris Harris Jr., who was left off the Combine list for very different reasons, obviously. It was, you know, because he went under the radar, had nothing to do with it. With his character, which has been impeccable, of course, but you know, it's the Combine has become a showpiece event for these guys. As part of I think the reason involved is that the Combine itself, being on that stage for that weekend and being a big sports story when it happens, it's a privilege. Being there is a privilege, and I think the league is throwing its weight around a little bit and trying to send a message to these guys by saying, okay, you know, if you do this, we're not going to have you on that big stage.
Well, and why would they want it? They don't want the reporters. You don't want a press conference with reporters asking questions about this stuff. And Twitter, I'm not making a political statement here, but Twitter was alive with different takes on how Trump's press conference went today. You don't want that same kind of firestorm happening with one of these players.
Well, it's, and I can just go back through the years at combines, at press conferences that have sort of fallen off the rails, to go way back to Maurice Clarett. He actually went to back-to-back combines because of his situation, and you know, the press conference quickly went out of control against him, and there was only about a quarter of the media there is now staring down these guys. I mean, I can think back to, you know, the questions that Cam Newton faced. I mean, I remember even Vontaze Burfict coming through a few years ago, and he was running at a podium, he was at a table and getting all sorts of questions about the character issues that he had. And, you know, with this being a spotlight event, I think certainly the NFL probably wants to monitor what kind of guys are up there and what they're saying.
Andrew, always fun talking with you. We'll do more Combine draft stuff coming up next week, I'm sure, in the Horsing Around podcast. It's Andrew Mason, of course, of DenverBroncos.com. Go check out his top 100 free agents as you browse the site here. More to come here on the Horsing Around podcast.